Welcome to the HR Mentor Podcast, the podcast dedicated to guiding early career HR professionals towards an amazing and fulfilling HR career. I'm your host, Melanie Reed. I'm a seasoned HR professional and university professor who has been right where you are, on the brink of an amazing HR career. Through this podcast, we will explore actionable career strategies that will help you build organizational credibility and propel your career forward. Whether you're on your commute, taking a break, or just seeking some inspiration, you're in the right place to create a career and a life that you love. Hey there, I'm Melanie Reed, and I am so excited to welcome you to Season 5 of the HR Mentor. I am honored and grateful to be recording this from my home on the traditional and unceded territories of the Tecumloops to Shequemic people within Shequemigulu. These lands have been protected and nurtured by Indigenous people since time immemorial, and I am thankful for their stewardship and the land that I'm able to live, work, play, and raise my children on. I am so thrilled to kick off Season 5 with a very, very special guest. Cheryl Brown and I connected on LinkedIn years ago and have been sharing HR stories, parenting and work memes, and inspiring and empowering messages ever since. I finally convinced her to join me on the HR Mentor podcast to talk about her career journey, and it was truly worth the wait. Cheryl's extensive experience in human resources is a testament to her adaptability and her expertise across a variety of sectors. With a career spanning over 15 years, she has honed her skills in both nonprofit and for-profit environments, dealing with unionized and non-unionized settings, and has adapted to the unique challenges of service, manufacturing, and mining industries, to name a few. And we're going to talk specifically about resource sectors today. Her commitment to continuous learning is evident in her pursuit of an ICF coaching certification and her plans to further her education with a master's degree. Outside of her professional endeavors, Cheryl finds joy in the simple pleasures of life, cherishing moments with loved ones, exploring culinary arts, and embracing the great outdoors. Her well-rounded lifestyle and dedication to growth in all aspects of her life assist her in her role as HR manager with Hudbay Minerals Copper Mountain Mine. Cheryl also holds an impressive number of designations, including the CPHR, SHRM SCP, CTMP, and RPR. One of the things I love about Cheryl is her commitment to continuous growth and development. She is an inspiration and a role model for how to stay open to opportunities and to challenge and push yourself to live your best life. I am so honored to have Cheryl in my circle of amazing women. If you are not already following her on LinkedIn, make sure you do that today. You can find her connection information in the show notes, wherever you're listening. I truly hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did. Cheryl, welcome. Thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate you taking some time. I know you're really busy, but I'm excited for you to share a little bit about your background and your career journey with the listeners.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate being here, and I'm honored. So thank you for asking.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about you and your HR career journey, sort of highlights, whatever it is you want to share about how you came to be where you are today.
Well, I've been around probably in the workforce about 30 years, maybe just a little bit more. And throughout those, early years, I actually started going down the path of being a CGA, an accountant. Came up against a couple of situations that made me go, I think maybe I'd like to be in HR and save the world. So in 2007, I actually started my career with a company called in forestry called Toco Industries, where I was the employee services coordinator. From there, it's been an interesting career, and where I've worked across Western Canada within the forestry sector. I've spent time in the Indigenous community, serving a couple of different Indigenous communities. And then just fast tracking, did some education along that time to more recent in October of 2021, I took a leap of faith and I joined a copper mine in Princeton, BC, where I'm the HR manager.
That's interesting. I was smiling when you said you were pursuing the accounting path and then saw the light. That's not what you said, but that's how I interpret it. But it is actually surprisingly common for people to go from accounting to HR. And I haven't quite figured it out yet, but I know when I was going to university, one of my best university pals, she was on the path to accountant and then switched to HR. So I've seen it happen more than once. So that's interesting.
Well, and maybe as a side note, when you think about CPHR BC, I'm going to be so embarrassed to hear Anthony, our CEO,
CEO.
right? I mean, that's his background is financial and HR, so there's
That's
something to be
true.
said, right?
Yeah. Well, it certainly is a skill set that you need in an HR role that I think a lot of people don't realize. Understanding the business, understanding how people get paid and where that money is coming from is pretty important when you're not even when you're leading an HR function, but just understanding how the business operates helps you better support managers and HR strategies. So.
Yeah, being able to help a hiring manager to know the difference between post and pre, or because it's a highly specialized role, engaging in a an external talent organization that specializes in, say, finding engineers, for example, to even even often entry level roles where sometimes they're hard to find in smaller communities, they might engage in a an external contract. Just looked at an example like that today where we did a cost analysis and you're saving, when we broke it down, we're saving, $500,000 if we were to hire in-house, and that's with
Wow.
fully loaded costs with benefits, et cetera. So, that business acumen is definitely important.
Absolutely. Yeah. Can you share a little bit about opportunities for HR professionals in the mining industry? I personally have no experience with that. I've talked to a few people that have worked in that industry, but don't know very much about it. So could you share that with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Full disclosure, I've only been in the position 2.5 years, and I'm still learning so much about the industry. And I'm really happy that it's got a strong focus on the DE&I as well as women in mining. Given that, even at our site, we're about 85% male versus female representation. But with the HR side, you can do everything from clerical type, administrative type roles to recruitment to being a true generalist. In the unionized sites, we're non-union, but in the unionized sites, you'd be looking at being a not a generalist, but a labor relations advisor, expert. You could be a labor relations at a more senior level where you're negotiating the collective bargaining agreements. And then from employee relations, to actually being a full business partner, back to what we said initially. But I also think when you look at some of what Josh Burson, I hope I said that correctly,
Yeah.
and I think it's David Ulrich, and then some of the other, either scholars or experts out there, and you look at how things are changing with technology, artificial intelligence. There's just so many other opportunities that you're going to see evolving within the human resources space within the mining industry, especially a larger organization. You've got organizational development, coaching, which is becoming a very popular career path as well. Executive coaching, coaching new leaders, learning and development,
Yeah.
data scientists, being able to take the data, whether it's on the HRIS, the payroll side, or even from applicant tracking or engagement surveys and being able to take that information and make sense of it, engaging not just the workforce but the business and being able to bridge the two together that's meaningful and impactful for the individuals but also productive for the business and ultimately, a return on investment. So
Are most mines large in the sense of having a lot of employees in a site, or are there some mine sites that are what we would consider maybe small to medium size operations?
Yeah, no, great question. This is my first experience with this mine, although I probably, without going on too much of a tangent, I've been digging in a lot and trying to learn as much about the business as I can, and that includes networking with various groups to learn about the business, including the TSM, which is the Total Sustainable Program in mining, Total Sustainable Mining. And so I guess the answer is it depends. I mean, you can take a mine site, and I'll just think Canadian operations where, they start with exploration and just getting it off the ground. You could have as few as maybe 50 to 100 people to a site like Hi Teck Highland Valley Copper, where, you're looking at 1500 employees or more. So, and I know previously working in the camps and catering space, I know fully functioning in, I believe it's just outside of Saskatoon, BHP, the potash mine in, for Jansen, about 4,000 employees in an underground mine. So it's really a wide range.
So not always large employment sites as well.
And I think tying it back to the role of HR, I think it also really depends on the site. In terms of what HR does, you take an organization like Newmont, Newcrest, which is very global, very large organization. There's many more layers, and things tend to be segregated there, right? And a little more. I don't. I always struggle with this word, to be honest, bureaucratic. But it is very different than compared to a single asset operation where you're a true generalist. You're exposed to everything. From just general recruitment, employee relations to potentially a seat at the table and helping the business make good decisions in terms of their people and culture.
So I'm wondering, if people are looking at different industries in terms of, industries they'd like to work in. What makes the mining industry unique or different from other industries? Different from other resource-based industries? Is there a difference between mining and forestry or
Well, I like both industries. I would say that I've spent a chunk of my career, HR career, specifically in forestry and grew up in rural Manitoba. So I think on the thing about forestry, I encourage anybody to consider that path for a bit is because it is a renewable resource and it's fascinating. Unlike, in the mining space where once you've removed that mineral or metal out of the ground or the coal, once it's gone, it's gone. Right, it doesn't come back. So that is, probably the biggest difference between forestry and mining. What makes it unique is, again, there's so much to learn, and you work with so much diversity in terms of skills and experience and knowledge. You think about geology and surveying and the work that they do to find the minerals, or in our case, it's a copper mine. So but you would think that they're just it's just copper, but it's not. There's gold and silver, which I would have never thought you would find. So you learn a lot in that. It's fascinating in terms of, the First Nations and Indigenous, kind of the reconciliation components and the work that's involved there. When I look at it through that lens, there's just so much there to learn. And in 2.5 years, I've barely scratched the surface. And also in terms of the steps towards truth and reconciliation, again, that's another place that HR could, provide value and engagement, and it's very interesting and exciting in the same sentence. So, you think about your engineers and you think about processing and that whole process from supply chain and moving, getting it out of the ground and then, from the ground to the customer and that whole in between. I find it very fascinating.
And would you say the HR challenges are different than in other organizations? Like, say, for example, I work in a university, not in HR anymore, obviously, but you're dealing with different types of employees, but maybe the HR issues are the same, or are they different in mining?
I like that question. I remember talking to a few mentors a few years back, and people that had were, at the end of their career, and they used to say HR, it just comes full cycle over the course of your lifetime in the industry. And I didn't really understand what they meant by that, but I think people are people. And so, to some extent, I don't, and actually I'm really stumbling again, but as I think out loud through this, dialing it back for a second, when the headhunter called me about this opportunity, my first reaction was, thank you, but I am not qualified for this job. I have no mining
Okay.
experience.
Right.
And I said, have a nice day. And I ended the call. And he was a bit relentless and said, you have a very diverse background, and I think the company would be very interested. Anyway, so now I understand what he meant is HR is HR. It doesn't matter what industry, what organization you're in, whether you're in a profit, nonprofit. I know I did some volunteering for a nonprofit in Kamloops. A lot of the functions you do, I would say, is the same. It's the people, the environment, that's what changes. And in a mine, you're working with professionals, and the largest part of your workforce are what we call non-desk workers, right? The
Right.
frontline people operating equipment, working in the field. And so that certainly would be different from, say, an academic setting. But in terms of HR, I would say the challenges are really no different. I mean, we talk about it all the time. Recruitment, talent,
Yeah.
sourcing talent, right? Mobility, having, people wanting to, especially smaller locations. And forgive me if I'm rambling, stop me, but
No, because that's the next question. It's about small communities, 'cause so keep going.
Good segue.
Yeah.
So, it is very hard to recruit to the smaller communities. I've spent a good part of my career in all four Western provinces, primarily in the small communities. And my advice to any HR professional looking to get out there and, really get some experience and exposure, take a chance, leave the bigger city where, quite honestly, the pay is greater in the smaller communities and the mining space or forestry. The culture can be very rich. It can also be very isolating.
Yeah.
It's really what you make of it. And I know for me it's been successful, but I know people that I've brought along that have had that exposure. It's catapulted their careers when they go back to the bigger centers, because when you're working in a smaller community, you don't have the same resources available that you would in a large urban setting. And so it tends to be a greater reliance on you for a variety of different things as an HR professional. And so you get a lot more exposure than perhaps you would in a large urban setting.
Yeah, I agree. And I've given that advice to a number of students. Like, don't limit yourself when you graduate to Vancouver, Calgary, and Toronto. Like, go to Prince George. And, you and I both know someone that started their career in a camp in Prince George. And, that did catapult her career and that experience and some good mentoring. And I've had another TRU student on here who's in the Kootenays. And one of my other former students went to the Kootenays and was given a great job opportunity. So there's lots of examples of how that is a great launching point. And whether you stay in a small community or not, well, that is up to you. That some people love it, some people it's just not their thing. But it's good to be open to those opportunities because there is a ton to learn. And sometimes that can be a bit intimidating if you don't have a good support network, but I think if you have good mentors and people around you, it can be really beneficial. Cheryl, you said it's worked for you and you don't mind the smaller community. What do you think are some of the benefits of living in a smaller community?
Oh my goodness, lots. For one, I'm not fighting the traffic to and from home.
Yeah.
I can go to the grocery store, and you're in and out in 5 minutes. And chances are you're going to meet somebody from the community and have a conversation about the hockey game. Or if you have children, you might be talking about, I know here in Princeton, we have an art club. They do a play twice a year. It's fascinating, and the talent's incredible. which you would never think would be in a small town, Princeton. There's just there's so many different things that you can do. So it, I think in terms of benefits, it's that sense of community that sometimes I feel in a bigger setting, a bigger city, it's tougher to have, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when I think about challenges, how remote you are, how far you are to the most urban setting, that's always interesting. I think back to northern Manitoba where we were, you know, depending which highway, 8 hours or five and a half, you would be stocking up, you know, once a month at Costco and trying to figure out how to get back in the vehicle to drive because you loaded up on the savings to drive, you know, simple things like Kleenex and toilet paper and
Yeah.
you know, bounce paper towel and you know, things of that nature where those are, you know, the challenges is things are a bit more costly when you're in a smaller center that community that's further from the larger urban centers.
Right.
So you do have to sort of change your lifestyle. I laughed at my one daughter. She's become a minimalist. I'm learning lots from her. And
Yeah.
she said that, you know, the trauma for her was the remote communities and always stocking up. And it took her a long time to get past the programming of, oh, look, what's that? Herbal Essence. It's on sale. I better get 10 of those.
Right.
So the convenience when you're in a bigger center is you can buy as you need on a daily basis. But when you're
Right.
remote, you do have to think wisely about things that you can stock up on because it is more costly.
And you have to plan ahead for that as well.
Yeah, I was going to
Yeah.
say travel planning ahead, but there, yeah, I like to think the rewards and I guess the benefits and challenges often they outweigh, you know, they sort of balance out. But I think from a, I'm just going to use like a recruitment lens because I always get excited about this. I think back to one of the sites I recruited for in Toko years back, and we didn't have a lot of diversity at that time, and that was one of the things they introduced. And I remember this one tradesperson, and he was from India, and they said, "Oh, he's just going to use us to get a, you know, some ex Canadian experience, and he's going to leave." And I said, "Nope, because we're lining it up to what the community has to offer, and the experience, and it's very similar to where he came from, India." Those guys had to really say thanks, Cheryl, because 10 years later, guess who's still working there?
Right. That's
Right?
awesome.
It makes you feel good. I've been trying to recruit him to come to Copper Mountain, Princeton, but he just likes where he is. So, you know,
Yeah.
again, so when you talk about those benefits and challenges, you know, do the research as an HR professional, and there's just so many opportunities out there. Just think about what your needs are and your interests are, and try to marry them up. Chances are you'll have a rewarding career.
Well, and it's interesting you say that about being a match because, I talk about it a lot on the podcast from the other side, from the candidate side, right? So you need to know what it is you want and you need to know what it is you have to offer. And then when you find it with a potential employer, the rest is easy. The interview's easy because you're both talking the same language, right? And maybe you don't know everything about what it's like to live in a small town, but there are aspects of it that you find appealing. Talk about those things or even being curious. And if you're recruiting, don't ignore those sorts of aspects, right? Like I remember recruiting for a smaller community and in a resource-based manufacturing plant. And there were certain aspects of working there, even though we weren't too far from a big center, but there were certain aspects about working there that were unique that might be challenging for someone. So we talked about those things at the beginning. We were like describing it in a lot of detail and like, what do you think about that? Because they were having issues with turnover. And then I said, okay, that's not working. Let's have people come and go through the site. Spend time with one of your millwrights, go out into the plant and actually experience what it's like, and then let them say, I'm okay with this. Right. And I think we can be more creative as recruiters, and I think we can be more discerning as candidates and But we shouldn't assume that just because somebody is from a certain place that this is not going to be a fit for them. We have to give them the details and let them decide if that's a fit. And you were probably naturally good at doing that. So
I get really excited, and again, I guess this is sort of blanketing some of the things we've talked about. Two things. I just want to circle back. I think about mining and the uniqueness of it. Again, it's a finite resource, so once it's gone, it's gone. But at the same time, that doesn't necessarily mean that your career ends there. Some mines have a long life and a long history. Mining in this area is over 100 years old.
right.
Our mine in that our company has in northern Manitoba, it's a 100-year history. Some mines have a 7 to 10 year life. It just depends. But I wouldn't, if you had the opportunity to go, I would encourage you or whoever to seize that opportunity, because the amount of experience you'll get in that short time frame, it could
It's
be
huge.
invaluable for your future career. And you're going to meet so many different people. And have such a wide exposure of things that you may never get working, at a smaller organization in an urban setting. But the other thing I want to say about diversity, I get really excited about this. So, thinking about that same site where I was in, bringing in some diversity, we hired somebody who had a PhD, and she wasn't more than 4 foot, I don't know, 4 foot 6. She's just such a tiny, tiny person. But she packs a really good punch. And I remember them, they first looked at her and said, "No, she's too educated. We can't hire her." And I said, "Okay." So a little while, months go by, and we haven't still found the person. And so I reintroduced this candidate again. And I said, "Can we have a second look? I mean, her industry is not forestry. However, from a quality assurance and quality monitoring control, those skills are so transferable. So can we look at it?" And we did, and they hired her. She was incredible. I then left that company and I stole her. I literally stole her for the next company I went to. And so
Good for you.
this is the power of HR, diversity and fun and the things that you get to be exposed to. So I went to another organization, and we were looking for a Lean Six Sigma black belt manager. I called her up and I said, "You know what? You have a chance to double your income." She was an immigrant to Canada. I said, "Would you like to join?" She's so humble. She said, "I can't do it. I can't do it, Cheryl." I went, "Can you think about it?" And I waved some pretty good incentives in front of her. And looking back, what we did to her was cruel as a company, because we said to her, "We will pay you $120,000 a year, and we will pay for your Lean Six Sigma, but you got 6 months to achieve it, your black belt." And she's never done continuous improvement ever. "Achieve it. If you achieve it, great. But then you also have to have a payback equivalent to your salary in the first year." Talk about
Wow.
pressure.
No
You know what?
kidding.
She had never worked in the industry more than about a year prior to that. She not only was second top in the class in achieving her black belt, she also achieved 1.5 times her salary in a payback as her first project.
Unbelievable.
Right? So, always get creative. Look at, again, on the recruitment side, dig deep on what are those transferable skills, talents they have, because it's rewarding when you work in those remote locations to bring candidates, and they bring a different perspective, and that the trade-offs are huge.
Do you think that managers are more inclined to just look for job titles on resumes?
I would say yes and no. I think it's a famous HR term, which I now understand. It depends. It
I know
really
it's the answer for everything.
completely. But it really does. I think if you have a more junior manager who hasn't done a lot of hiring, and interviewing and selection, they're looking to just put the sort of proverbial warm bum in a cold seat. And then that has a whole other set of tasks for you as an HR person. A more seasoned manager, they're going to skim that resume in 6 to 12 seconds to determine whether or not it's not just title, but how long were they there, and what were their achievements that made them successful in the role. And so titling maybe, but they're more focused on what the what were their successors. So for example, able to do high, you know, if I think recruitment, for example, high volume recruitment in, you know, 30 days, right? X amount of people. That would be of more interest than the position of senior recruiter, you know, talent professional, right? It's more about what can you do. So and it does depend on the manager for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I just always think one of our roles in HR, I think sometimes is helping managers see things that they maybe don't have time or experience seeing. You've looked at thousands of resumes, and so you can maybe see through the forest a little bit to pick out those transferable skills more likely than someone who's looking at resumes, 10 of them once a year. So, but I think sometimes we forget that our role is to help the manager see those things that is not obvious to them, as opposed to just being an order taker, them saying, here's five applicants, and taking on that role of, I don't know, I kind of always looked at it as like an internal consultant. Like, my job isn't just to do what they ask me to do, but to do what, like, I'm providing a service. And so it's my job to see what else needs to be added or point out things that they're not seeing in an obvious way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it completely does. And I think, you know, another piece as you're saying that, Melanie, you're absolutely spot on. And I think as that internal consultant, that true partner, we also have to, as an HR professional, we have to make sure we check our own biases and we don't get caught up in the biases of the hiring manager or the hiring team, because that's where we can do a disservice to the candidate, to the business, to the hiring manager, and maybe even to ourselves in terms of our reputation. And I can just think of so many examples where, you know, sometimes we get caught up in those stories. We might have a bias and we miss out on really good opportunities to employ somebody. You know, and I love analogies. I love stories. And one that is really fresh for me is we had hired somebody, this is previous career, we'd hired somebody in the trades, very neurodiverse, brilliant. He reminded me of like a mad, quirky scientist. The team really enjoyed the interview, thought he was going to be great. He didn't last 3 months before he self-selected. And I felt very bad. I felt like I had failed. And that was an example of my own bias. I believe in people until I have a reason not to. And I felt this person, you know, was extremely astute, had quite an interesting hobby at home and background. He was, you know, a 2000, whatever it is, MacGyver, you know, and I felt this guy was going to be great in the job that we hired him for, but the team wasn't ready for him. And so that's an example of where your bias can help influence decision that can actually have a really negative outcome down the road.
Yeah, that's an important point, because I think the other side of that, as I said, you've looked at 1,000 resumes. And so sometimes we get caught in the routine part of hiring, and we don't think about, or maybe give enough thought to the fact that, helping the manager make this decision not only impacts them and the business, but you're impacting somebody's life by giving them that job. And so we have a responsibility to not put people in situations where, I mean, ultimately it's their decision, but if we know that this is going to put that person at risk, whether, because the team's, to your point, not ready for them, or the organization is not ready for them, we're doing everybody a disservice. And that's a tough decision to make. That's not an easy decision to make if you see the potential and think it would be good for the business. But yeah, it's tricky.
And sometimes the hiring manager doesn't want to, you know, they've made their decision and they don't want to hear what you're also seeing as potential flags or risks. So I'm learning as I go. I'll be a lifelong learner in that respect. The art of negotiation and influence. I mean, I think
It's
that's a
huge.
continual work in process. You're dealing with human beings and they're each unique and no two experiences I feel are the same. So that's another important piece of that for sure.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's move back to you and your career. Can you maybe talk a little bit about how mentorship has played a role for you in your HR career?
Yeah, actually, that's such a timely question. So, when I took this role in fall of 2021, I really asked myself, what am I doing? But I was excited for the challenge, a new type of industry. I met the people here, they were amazing. It was hands down, I have to do this. And looking back, I have no regrets. But part of what happened is I came to an organization. So lesson number one, go to the career page and check out what are they hiring for. And if all they're hiring for on the career web page is HR, run as fast as you can. But anyway, no, I'm kidding. No, that really is a true story. I should have went, wait, what's going on here? But so I came and it's been hugely rewarding. I've enjoyed it immensely. But in this space, I had thought I didn't have mentors throughout my lifetime, throughout my career. And I started searching, and a couple of years, I guess it's about a year and a half ago, I had joined a group in the natural resources space, started by Beth Baroti, called the Femina Collective. And that's when I really started to have, I guess, a bit of an awakening in the mining space and just the opportunities and the learning. But in that journey, and meeting these different women in the mining space, I started to network and meet others. And that's hard, by the way. The older we get comfortable. It is hard to network and meet new people and put yourself out there.
Yes.
But doing that was the eye-opening for me, because I realized I had thought I'd never had mentors over the years. And I never stopped to realize how many mentors I really had. Because when I think of a mentor, I think of the one that I recently put myself out there. I'm kind of jumping all over here, but I was at a crossroads a year ago, and I was watching on LinkedIn one of these professionals in the mining space, HR space, and she had won some awards for the work she did, and I was really impressed. So I went out on a limb and I reached out to her to connect, and I said, I'm a late bloomer. But I am wondering, when I say late bloomer, not just in HR, but also in the mining space, you have an impressive background. Your award really intrigues me. Mental health's important. Would you mentor me?
Good for you.
And I have to admit, it was nerve-wracking. But anyways, she accepted. And in this
Yay.
journey with her, it's been she's just so humble, incredible. And she's been fantastic along the way. And she's also helped me realize I've had more mentors looking back than I had really thought. And so I feel like I answered that in a very long, roundabout way. But more recently, I have what you call a direct assigned mentor that I've engaged. She sent me a fascinating book called Fearless Leadership by Loretta Melandro. Awesome book. If you're in
Yeah.
HR and you want to excel, I would strongly encourage you to read it. You can always tell on my LinkedIn post if I liked a book a whole lot. It's got a lot of tabs, a lot of
Yeah.
tabs. And that one I do. So Fearless Leadership.
We'll put a link in the show notes for people to go find it.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. So how has it played in my career? Well, I think back, it's interesting. I think back to one of the I'm still in contact with, but she was a manager at the time in my days with Tolko. And I really looked up to her, my VP, and I'd watch how busy they were and answering things. And, they're participating in a meeting, they're answering calls, they're stepping out. And I really thought that that's what being an HR manager is. And then I got there and realized, no, that's not what it is. So her and I had a really good conversation here about 2.5 years ago and how I'd really looked up to her. She would be an example of one of those mentors, because I watched what she was doing, where she was excelling. I
Yeah.
watched where she was not. Ironically, she didn't hire me for a position, and I was pretty slighted by it at the time. And fast forward a few years later, I've had some growth and opportunity, and I'd applied for a job that she offered me. And she said the reason she wanted to hire me this time was because she was just taken back by the growth and the desire to learn and excel. And we get into this really rich conversation, and all of a sudden I realize she was mentoring me all along. I just didn't realize it,
Yeah.
because she had influenced me in so many ways. Those opportunities are there. We just have to be open to listen, learn, watch, definitely being open. and they don't have to be direct.
I always think too, like if you're curious about people and what they're doing, like it sounds like you were at that time, you know, watching and observing and expressing some curiosity, people will sometimes mentor you, again, not in a formal way, but just by showing curiosity towards what they're doing. And I know that's how it was for me. I asked a lot of questions, probably fairly annoying ones. And that desire to learn is appealing to people in more senior roles. And so sometimes you'll find that even without asking people, they will take you under their wing and they will show you things because they see your desire to learn, right? And, you know, whether they look at it from the perspective of, oh, I want to mentor somebody or I want to share my knowledge. But I think good leaders do that naturally and they want to do that. And I think also sometimes people mentor you by showing you what not to do in some cases. Like you're talking about that boss and thinking, you know, I thought this what is what HR was. And some of, you know, my earliest VP was definitely what I would call a workaholic. Like I mean, she would drive her car back when you were allowed to have cell phones, and she would be talking on two cell phones and driving her car. And I would be on the other phone saying, I'm hanging up now because I feel like this is unsafe. You know, so that was an early model for me of a senior leader. And it did influence me a lot because as I went through my career, I would go so far, but when it came to those senior roles, I was always like, no, thank you. I don't want that because my personal life, and especially, you know, when my kids were little, I wasn't willing to give that up for any organization. And because that was my earliest model for that, I thought that's how all senior leadership roles were. And to be honest, in the organizations I've been in, that hasn't proven to be wrong. Right? So I always shied away from it. And I'm okay with that because that was what was modeled to me all along the way. And I'm sure there are people in senior HR roles that don't operate like that. I'm sure there are. That just wasn't my experience. So I consider that being mentored in terms of helping to guide my career decisions. Those leaders, without knowing it, were guiding my career decisions.
Yeah, you touched on so many important pieces there because when I talk about those indirect mentors, that's exactly what I observed, and I thought that's what it should be. And I, you know, because I've been a provider for my family, I have been that workaholic. I was raised in that generation that you're
Yeah.
rewarded for being a workaholic, and now I'm trying to change that. And it's very hard
Yeah.
to establish those boundaries and be a good role model for your own team, actually,
Yeah.
and what those boundaries are. And it's just so interesting you raise that because I think back to that example I shared. I'm watching this HR manager I'm looking up to, and that's exactly what it is. The only thing I think she was missing was like something off a 1950s movie where she's got a cigarette in her mouth, right?
And
And
a glass of bourbon.
I was just going to say in a glass of bourbon or something. And maybe at night, I know sometimes, but I know for me that was the expectation I was observing and thinking that's how I have to be, that's how I have to show up, and if I'm not doing that, and it's been very hard to break that cycle. I'm 23 kilometers up the mountain, and I still, instead of listening to some of my podcasts in the morning, and I have my favorites, including yours. I
Thank you.
still find myself not necessarily listening to my podcast. It's okay, who can I talk to for that 20 minutes up the road so I'm saving some time. And I just think to myself, I did it again today. I realized I had a full plate, and so, you know, I'm doing this business call. Yeah, it's terrible. And so
Well,
it's learning, right?
it is learning, and there are seasons where we have to do that, right? And it's interesting because I think here maybe this is the difference. Like I work a ton of hours as a professor, and I Yes, I'm very fortunate. I am entitled to a lot of time off and I have incredible freedom and flexibility. But I work a ton and I work on weekends and I work in the evening and I do that throughout the entire semester. And I tell my students, this is not a 9-to-5 job. I don't expect it to be. And if you need to meet with me on a Saturday because that's the only time that works for you, then we'll meet on a Saturday. I'm okay with that. But I love what I do, and it's a choice. I have the flexibility and the freedom. And I guess what I was observing in some of those leaders and probably making assumptions about is that they didn't have a choice. And I know that first boss loved her work, but I also saw it affect her health. And so, I translated that into she probably doesn't want to be working this much or in this way, but it's not a choice. And I think that's the difference. If you love what you do and that's your choice, it's not going to feel like a burden or that you're not setting boundaries. But if it is, then I think that's where people have to, I think it's important to take a step back and say, okay, is this a season? What's my plan? Am I going to do this forever? All those sorts of things, right? And that's part of the career journey too. And don't get me wrong, I have lots of days where I'm like, why did I say yes to that? I really, I'm learning boundaries myself because it, well, they, those things creep in, right?
I think, you touch on something really important here, which is, and I want to draw it back to our industry and mining. We're struggling. Much like for many years, we focused on, trades, and then there was a bit of a, I feel like a pendulum swing, and it was, you need to go to university and get an education. And now I feel like the pendulum's gone the other way, where we push so many people into having this formal university education that we have such a shortage on trades, right? People that actually are going to do certain work. And when I think about the mining space in particular, and forestry, it's been predominantly male oriented. We are trying to make it more attractive to females, to more diversity. And it really links back to what you just said, which is what we're seeing is there was a, and again, I'm still learning, so I'm not perfect at this, but we've been doing this push for DEI and B initiatives within the mining space and forestry to have a better example of what a work-life balance looks like, career options, building a life, and providing for you and your family. But what we're starting to see as a trend within the mining space, that's what I'm trying to spit out here, is that it's actually starting in some companies, it's actually going backwards. And the reason it's doing that, and I think the pandemic had a big role in this, and women are being penalized because women cannot work those hours. And I see it even in our company where we have a day, but because you're on a global scale and you got people in Peru and people in Toronto and people in Arizona, they're scheduling a meeting, a budget meeting from 6 to 8 o'clock at night. Well, that doesn't work when you have a family, or your short talent and your accounting department is trying to put their children to bed and then going back and doing work between 9 and 1:30 in the morning. Like that, we shouldn't be doing that to people. And so what, the trend that we're seeing is it's more women are leaving than staying, and so it's a lot of work in that respect. But that's not just us. You see that, like you shared your example, Melanie. I think that's anywhere. And so that's also why you see more women leaving leadership roles, is because of that
Totally.
demand and that spread.
I'm hopeful that these younger generations. Now I sound really old because doesn't everybody say, I hope the younger generation is going to fix the mess we created? Oh my gosh, I'm there. Yeah, but I do, I was watching this, I sent it to my daughter who's 19, and it's about someone who's a millennial talking to people from Gen Z saying, don't pick on us. We're not your problem. We're not your parents. Like, we didn't do this to you, and I think about those two generations that are our youngest workers in the workplace. And, I'm teaching them and I see like they're pretty good at putting up boundaries. They're not going to do what us Gen Xers did. Like they're not interested in the same way we weren't interested in working the way the boomers did. But you know, so we wanted some vacation and good benefits and some higher wages, but we weren't pushing back on the institution or the demands on our time. And they seem to be, and that's where things like quiet quitting comes from and all that kind of, you know,
Oh.
terminology. But really, why are we making fun of people who don't want to sacrifice their entire life for an organization? Like, we should admire that, not shame them for it. And I am hopeful that there's going to be a bit of a reset when this next group graduates from university and when the millennials become those managers and senior managers as they're starting to become. I'm hopeful that we start to see a bit of balance. But then again, we're a society that wants things instantly. And we want stuff and you know all of that, and that puts pressure on the labor market. And so I don't have the
You,
answers, but
I, but I think you touched on a couple of key points again related to mining that are so valid. So I want to say I really love about where I work, and I'm part of this. I can't take credit for it. It's our team here, but we're above the industry average for female representation in our mine. It's speckled across the site.
awesome.
Yeah, but it kind of comes back to the other piece that jogged my thought process is the generations. So at our site, and we see this actually in industry, you know, specifically in mining, we have boomers returning to the workforce or staying in the workforce, your Gen Xers, your millennials. And so, you know, when you think about or your earlier question about what are some of the challenges that you see, it's the generations, the engagement, those differences, building capacity, within the leaders and how you're promoting people. We promote people so often because of technical, but not for their leadership capability. And they have a harder time today than we've probably ever seen in history in terms of a workforce, a multi-generational workforce. I see it here where I am. And what's interesting though is yes, you might have some of those boomers and Gen Xers that they like to work and put in the hours and the overtime, but actually, we're seeing a lot of them saying, no, I don't want to live to work. I want to work to live. Right? COVID
That's good.
really changed how people are looking at things. And
Yeah.
so you do have people that are saying, and back to the millennial comment, saying, I'm not going to work 60, 80 hours a week. You know, I kind of like what that 20 something is saying about a work-life balance. So
Yeah.
I do agree with you that there's a shift. But it's, I feel like the system, the institution's almost like pushing back, but I don't think the institution, the system's going to win. The change is inevitable, kind of like a Marvel's comic and snapping that finger. I am
Yeah.
inevitable. It's going to change, like it
Well,
or not.
and I've been thinking a lot about how AI is going to help with that change,
Yes.
because we were talking today because the federal government has announced changes to international students and putting restrictions on how many students come in, and that we don't know how that's going to affect us at the university. Like we're just processing it, and I know it's upsetting to a lot of students and a lot of people who are planning to come here or have siblings that there's a big impact. But one of the other things we were talking about is who's going to do all the work, because a lot of those programs are a pathway to immigration because we don't have enough people to do the work. And you know as well as I do, because we've been talking about this since the 90s and the, you know, about this big bust happening, and there aren't going to be enough workers. So I wonder what role AI might play. People are worried about these shifts in, you know, in jobs, but if you've got one person working enough hours for two jobs, then maybe that's a role for technology, and maybe we just haven't quite sorted out what that looks like. And, you know, but then again, organizations have to take time to understand the technology and how it can help them, and that takes time too. So I don't know. I'm hopeful. I'm just looking at the time here and I realized taking a lot of your time. So I'm going to ask you one sort of wrap-up question. What advice do you have for new graduates or early career HR professionals?
Be brave, take risk, be vulnerable, and put yourself out there. And I can speak from that experience. For every time I've done that, it's been rewarding. I'm going to throw some caveats to that. And one of them is that I didn't sort of start this. I just want to be grateful for the traditional lands I am working within, which is I do live in Kamloops, but I also live in Princeton. So for me, it's the Whakpik and the Similkameen communities here, and I'm honored to be able to have that. And I recognize that I do come from a place of privilege. There's varying levels of privilege, and I think it's really important to acknowledge that, because throughout my opportunities across my career and across the Western provinces, I've had the ability to be able to pick up and move to these smaller communities. Not everybody has that luxury. Think of a new immigrant that's new to Canada that doesn't have a driver's license yet, let alone a vehicle. So, if you're a new grad, be open to those opportunities. Look for creative ways to make that job work in that small community, whether it's befriending someone that you can carpool with until you get that license and that vehicle in place. Take that risk, take those chances. When I think about people early in their careers, is just think of all the possibilities. They're endless. Often we come from, and I, as I'm learning, come from a place of scarcity. We always think from scarcity. And the reality is, there's abundance. There's enough for all of us. And I've learned that as one door closes, another one opens. And that's in part because of that vulnerability and being open. And I don't know everything. I'm a big Brené Brown fan. I'm learning every day. Anyway, I feel like I talked a lot today. I'm so sorry. I'm so nervous. But at any time, if you ever want to do this again and dig into more meatier things, I would love to, because there's just so much to unpack. And I'm a
There
strong
is.
advocate for people and opportunity. You'll see that in any place where I've worked. I'm a big advocate there. And that's maybe a story for another time.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Cheryl. I think that's wonderful advice. And thank you for sharing it and for sharing your experiences. I would love to talk more because I think we could have kept going for another hour, but you need to go and rest after a long day. So thank you so much for being so generous with your time and sharing your experience and your knowledge and your wisdom with us, because I think it's valuable and I know people are going to take away a lot from this conversation. So thank you, and I hope you do come back.
Yes, thank you.